So, Kim, thank you so much for being there. I've been so eager to have this conversation. Just for purposes of introduction, Kim Williams is the Vice President of People, Culture, and Compliance at Walker Advertising. Her experience and empowering approach contribute to essential workplace harassment discussions, and they are essential. She's fighting against toxic power plays by executives, an effort to demand change, and force bullies to accept responsibility. I hope that's accurate, Kim. You'll tell me if that's okay.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. Thank you.
All right, terrific. And I want to thank you for participating in this conversation that I'm titling Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis, because many of us who went through it before we knew there was help to be had could not find joy. And that was certainly my case. And I think as I read about you and your experience, that certainly seemed to be the case with you. So let me start with that, if you don't mind. I really found this quote chilling, not just because I have empathy for you and other target victims of bullying, but because it resonates with me. You said this, and I want to get your feelings about it and whether it's hyperbole, which I don't believe it is. This is a quote from you. When I was bullied at work, I felt like my life was in danger. And that resonates with me. And I'd just like you to tell us what was going on with you.
Yeah. So for me, you know, I was a chief of HR reporting up to a chief executive. And so it was a kind of an isolating experience because I couldn't go to HR. I was HR.
Yeah. Let's make sure we hear that appropriately. Yeah. You were head of HR.
Yeah, and it's happened to me. Yeah.
It's incredible.
And it's kind of an open secret in HR circles. There's a lot of HR folks that get punched down at, is particularly if they're trying to challenge an executive.
Uh-huh.
That's why I focus so much on executives, because a lot of times they either don't want to engage a bully or they are the bully themselves. And yeah, because they're more protected than, say, an hourly janitor. So yeah,
that's for sure. And I was in television for 25 years, and my story is about being bullied in television. I thought, well, I'm in television, I'm in New York, and I'll say this to you, you know, man up, Andy. You know, and I'm not a shy person. I was never bullied as a kid. I just thought, hey, you know, again, man up, get tough. This is your fault, your problem. And here I'm hearing that in HR you experienced it. So please go ahead.
Yeah. And so it really kind of opened my eyes to the pain a lot of people are feeling, you know, and because I had, quote, grew up in the HR field working with a lot of people of high integrity. And so I actually thought that that was normal until it began happening to me. And so when I challenged the CEO, I couldn't get support from anywhere there. You know, I went to the board, I went to inside counsel. Everyone openly acknowledged what was happening and no one wanted to engage. So I had to go about it alone.
Well, where did you get the strength and the courage to take on the CEO? My bully was often the CEO or the number two. And I just thought, I got to work harder. I got to work better. How did you have the courage to take on the CEO in that circumstance?
For me, I think it becomes where different pain comes from. So for me, the pain of being bullied was pretty excruciating. And the fear of losing my job as a single mother was pretty intense.
Yeah.
But the fear of not being a person of integrity, the fear of not being able to do my job, because how can I hold other folks accountable if we're in a space where the top is not playing by the rules? And so that ultimately outweighed the other piece. I talk very openly about how terrified I was. I don't want any, I want to like get rid of the shame around that stuff because I think it's paralyzing.
Yeah.
Because I talk about the first time I did engage this chief executive. My hands were shaking as I wrote the email. Like it, my cortisol was pumping. It felt very intense, but you know, I was able to hit that button and run away from the situation and go calm down and show back up and keep going.
And how did the bullying manifest itself? What was the behavior that you were confronted with?
Just you know, I used kind of a nice term of unhinged. It just felt almost crazy making. It was very cyclical. Like one second it would be very, very nice. Out of nowhere, you just never knew where the trip wires were. I found that this person who had been around for 30 years appeared to have some memory issues. And so they would ask for things. And when I would deliver those things, they would get angry. Why did you do this?
Wow.
And so it was just these kind of situations, but, you know, open threats to my jobs, you know, to extreme micromanaging, you know, screaming and yelling at me. When I went to the board, one of the board members went to them and said, hey, Kim just came in here and complained that you're being mean. And so got ripped to pieces over that, you know, basically like, don't go anywhere. No one's going to help you here. I get to do whatever I want. I've done this before. Everyone has my back.
Wow. And was this CEO, and, you know, was he so powerful and so successful that he felt he could get away with anything? And he had no concerns that this was hurting his organization.
None. And I brought that up repeatedly. And so when I looked at a lot of the department heads and I started talking to them about my experience, they're like, oh, yeah. You know, I found out where department heads were making up stuff in these meetings because they didn't want to have to engage or get, you know, pulled down a rabbit hole. One person confided that they actually tried to start fights with the deputy and the chief executive. So they'll focus on each other. And so he wouldn't be attacked. And so absolutely it was hurting. You know, there were very measurable, profound impacts to the organization. And even though that was communicated directly to the board, I think they individually, and it wasn't all of them, you know, there were some that wanted to address this, but I didn't have the majority of the votes in order to make that happen.
So I want to get into the deleterious effects on organizations, but I'm more concerned about you and other bully targets. And I can talk a little bit about the effects that it had on me, but physically, emotionally, psychologically, how did you deal with it or not deal with it?
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, one of the hardest things when your job is threatened and you're beginning to worry about finances and, you know, you're like, if I lose this job, will this be ruinous? Will this follow me? And so there can be a real strong knee-jerk reaction, of course, to not spend any money, you know, try it. And it's very difficult, but I found that it was so critical is I tried to tell myself, like, look, if I had cancer, if I had some life-threatening illness, I would spend anything, I would do anything, I would eat better, I would do whatever. So I applied that same principle. So I started doing yoga every day. I went for long walks every day, whether I felt like it or not. I actually went and got a lot of massages. And people are like, that seems indulgent. You can actually go to massage schools and get $25 massages in most places in the U.S. for an hour by a student. But I was so focused on my cortisol because I could feel it. And so when I brought my cortisol down, I slept and then I could focus because every day I had to show up. I had to like put armor on. I had to have boots up. Yeah. I had to be ready. And I've watched other people kind of flame out and you start to succumb to all the stress. And so it's so critical, no matter what you're feeling outside, to really at your core, build yourself up as much as you can.
Well, it sounds like you did a great job responding to the psychological harassment. Did you experience any physical ailments? In my experience, I had digestive problems. I couldn't sleep. I had suicidal ideation. I never really thought about, I'm going to do this. It didn't get that bad, but I've talked to other people who literally committed suicide. Now, they weren't successful, you know, but they tried because of all the trauma. And this stuff stays with you forever, it seems.
Yes, it does.
And so I'm wondering, did you have any of those or were you so strong and capable that you were able to do these things, which sound like a great way to cope, but still as a single mother, that must have been still so, so difficult. And also just kind of where you lose all your energy, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Energy was definitely hard. Sleep definitely went out the window. I think my child was kind of a saving grace. I'll never forget one of kind of the rock bottom moments where I had called somebody close to me and I was driving home from work and I had just been chewed out again. And I'm like, I'm sick to my stomach. Like my whole body just feels terrible. And, you know, I'm scared to death. And I'm talking to them about like, you know, just like, this is so bad. I don't know what I'm going to do. And like, I really need to say something. I really need to do something. And I remember this person getting very upset with me and telling me I was a bad mother. They're like, how dare
what?
You?
Wait. Go back again. Because you're saying these things so quickly, like matter of fact. Mr. Holy, who's going after you about your work performance, is saying you're a bad mother?
My friend that I confided in.
I see. Okay, I want to make sure I get that. Okay.
For not tolerating the bully. It was almost like a man, how dare, I'm at fault. How dare you put your daughter's, financial security in jeopardy by.
I see. Got it.
Yeah, just take the abuse. And that's really, really common. You know, a lot of times people call it mobbing. You see the additional injury where your friends turn on you, people avoid you. But it was in that moment that I started thinking about, I don't want this to ever happen to her. Yeah. I would want her to feel safe enough to stand up for her, for me to have her back. It actually incentivized me more to do that. But what I've found is that every time I wrote a letter, every time I wrote an email, everything quieted down. I was never fired. I was always bracing for that. But I gained power from it. I started to own the story, and there started to build some safety that I began walking through from there.
And so I assume that as the head of HR, you really didn't have any support because you were supposed to be the support system. Is that right? Did any of your colleagues say, I'm going to go to the board as well? Or was that not an option?
No, everybody would whisper to me I'm glad you're doing this.
Yeah.
But I can't speak up to. Now, when we got to the later stages, I will say my staff was incredibly supportive with this, in the sense that they had all directly experienced it. I had one person on my team who broke out in hives for 3 days straight before they had to engage this person. I knew that for them that they were kind of quietly okay, I'm glad somebody's addressing this. And that also helped, knowing from some of the other folks, hearing the tears, hearing the conversations also kind of helped me find some courage that okay, I'm not alone. Others are doing this. But then when we came down to, I had to force an investigation from an outside investigator. But once I came forward and everyone knew it was me, other people started coming forward once those questions started being asked, because there was now security and safety in numbers. The process was taken outside of the organization. And ultimately, the contract was not renewed at the top. And so it did have a positive impact.
And did you also lose? So he lost his job at some point. Well, good for you. That doesn't happen very often in my experience.
Right.
The CEOs that I was confronted with and were my bullies went on to make millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's usually the case. Yeah.
But did you lose your job or were you able to hang in there?
I negotiated an exit.
Okay.
And so I got an attorney and I left, but it was on terms that were very favorable to me.
Good.
And that's what that's part of the reason why I focused so intently on executive abuse. I feel like that's an area that's ignored. I feel like HR as a profession needs to be better trained on how to manage up and how to engage that space. Because there's so much focus on the rank and file, but if you're not dealing with that top, you're not dealing with problems. And so now I work for a CEO who's very high integrity. I write articles, called How to Sue Your Boss, and he likes them. And so he's not afraid of that because that's how much principle he has. He really lives his values. And so I feel like I won all the way around and I want to help as many other people do that too. So, yeah.
And you are, and we're going to talk more about that. But let me ask this. You hired an outside firm. In my understanding, and certainly in my experience, the reason that this is such an important and in my mind, interesting issue is, and I want to make it clear to people who may be new to this issue is, we're not talking about harassment where race is involved, where gender is involved, where LGBTQ issues are involved. There are laws against that. That doesn't mean it stops it, but you do have a remedy.
Yeah.
And whether those remedies are working or not can be debated in another forum. What we're talking about is something that's completely legal. And in many cases, as was in your case, approved, allowed in the organization. So my question for you is, and I know this is the work you're doing, we're going to get to that, but most people don't have the option. And certainly probably a lawyer won't help. If you hire a lawyer, they'll tell you you have no case, but that's not really an option for most people.
It can be. And so you're absolutely right. It's a weakness in, civil rights laws that were drafted a very long time ago. And there's an easy workaround. Just be cruel to everyone. And now it's no longer unlawful harassment, which is pretty awful. But what we're seeing is an age of accountability that's beginning to bubble up. And, you know, I really credit like your son and my daughter's generation because, you know, I talk to a lot of executives where like, you're just one TikTok video from real accountability that can have real financial impacts to an organization. Gretchen Carlson's been doing some amazing work around this too, showing that like if you're a public company in a highly visible space, you know, one news cycle and you can see like a 5% drop in your stock values, which is starting to trigger other things. So we're starting to see more shareholder derivative suits where they're going after boards that knew about toxic environments, whether it was legal or not, because it's impacting their finances. And so that's becoming really meaningful. In the state of Texas, I've also seen in a few other places too, breach of contract. And so if you have an employee handbook that has a code of conduct policy, and a lot of them do, that go beyond EEOC rules, and they spell out, you're entitled to an investigation, you're entitled to all of these things, and they don't do that, you can actually sue your company just for that. Workers' comp. I filed a workers' comp claim based on abuse, and I won. So there's still ways to go after finances. And the reason why finances are so important is you don't get boards on board until it starts hitting a bottom line. And there are a lot of ways to get at that.
All right. Well, that's great, because that's really interesting information for me, and I hope for the people watching this. So let me go back to that, because it doesn't seem like many organizations, especially the ones ruled by a toxic environment, let's say, care much about the people.
Right.
But we know, or at least we think we know, that they care about the business and they care about revenues. You talked earlier about something that I experienced in my career being in television. It's the communications business. And in one particular place I worked, we spent so much time talking about the bully boss and the lost production time, because everybody was talking about, oh, what he did today, what he did yesterday, who he did it to, what a bad person he is, although those weren't the words they used. The loss of productivity, the people that left the company, the people who spent so much time, again, talking to each other as opposed to talking about great things that they could be doing together, the chilling effect. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can get into that a little bit and again, talk about, if they don't care about the people, they should very much care about how this affects the bottom line.
Absolutely. In fact, I worked with one of our partners through my company, Rippling, and we came up with a brilliant jerk formula. And so for us, so HR can do this pretty easily because they have access to everyone's salaries, but anyone can technically do this. I mean, you can go on Glassdoor, you can look at job postings that now require salary ranges. You can get a sense of what folks are earning around you. And so there's kind of these indexes that HR use around productivity. And so what you can look at is, say like you've got a great culture with highly engaged employees. That typically means you're getting a 90% return on investment. So if you're giving that individual $100,000 between vacation, sick days, and all that other stuff, you're getting 90% of that back. Mm-hmm. If you're in a toxic environment, though, you can start pulling that way down. And so you can see like medium engaged employees are typically around 50 to 60%. And those that are just checked out from bullying are roughly 30%. So we actually automated the process and did a test run where I won't call myself a brilliant jerk. I was just saying I was a jerk. And so we did a 360 review.
All right.
And I asked my boss to give me 5 stars because the boss always loves a brilliant jerk. They wouldn't be there otherwise. I gave myself 5 stars. And I asked my peers and my subordinates to just rake me over the coals. And the system that we built automatically flagged it and then took everyone's salary. So for my peers, they cut them down by a third because they're more protected. And then they took all my direct reports and cut their salaries in half. And then it immediately spit out a number of $240,000 and said, that's how much you're losing just by me being a nightmare to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it over and over again. And did you also look at, and you alluded to this just a moment ago, but a positive work environment, what does that do to, and in my experience, and I was a boss getting bullied usually by the CEO or the number two. I was an executive producer, vice president of original programming, executive vice president of original programming. You know, the most expensive thing in my view is losing a good person. Now that may be from bullying, may not, but if you lose a good person because of a toxic work environment, now you've lost a good person. You may not have been getting productivity from them. And now you got to spend all this time and maybe even hire somebody for more money who you have to train and everything else. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that issue.
Well, not only that, but, you know, employees feel so empowered now to completely trash you on Glassdoor, on all these other reviews. So it's not even just that. It's the fact that it can now be even harder to recruit because your reputation can be at the end. And if you're like in a small circle environment where everyone knows everyone and that person's saying, hey, this is really toxic, like you're probably going to end up with a lower caliber person because that reputational damage will follow you even further. So yeah, there's a number that folks typically throw out there around like a third of their salary is what you're going to lose, you know, and it's actually more the higher up you go and just recruitment costs, the time and energy spent, you know, lost opportunity costs by being short staffed, burnout for other employees because they're not being worked, the ripple effect of, oh, this person left and now it's in other people's heads that there's, you know, maybe I should be looking at the exit too. There's definitely real numbers that you can start to put around that.
So with these tools, if you will, the ability to communicate with thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people out there through social media, which we didn't have years ago when this was happening to us. And for me, I felt very alone in that because I was a boss and what I was trying to do is shield my team from that. And so it was my job to take it all on. And I figured, hey, I'm the boss of this group and I'm getting paid a handsome salary. But it doesn't matter how much you make when you're going through that. It really doesn't. And so having said that, I was really wondering, and I thought, well, you know, when COVID happened and nobody wanted COVID, but I thought with the advent of Zoom meetings and remote work, that the bullying might diminish somewhat because they're not literally in your face, but they are digitally in your face. And it seems like it hasn't abated. And so my question for you is, yes, Glassdoor, yes, social media and so forth. Everybody I talk to in varying degrees still has a bullying story. So again, it doesn't seem like what I call this epidemic of workplace bullying and incivility has decreased in any significant amounts. What's your experience? You're out there.
Yeah, no, it's increased. I mean, so right now, you know, like the latest surveys that are coming out are showing 48 million Americans have endured this. And I felt exactly as you did. Like I wanted to protect my people by not talking about it, by putting on a brave face, making sure everything was okay. But I think all of us are kind of conditioned to not talk about it, to frame it as a weakness, to talk about, it'll look bad on me.
I had so much shame. Yeah. Like, we all did. I was never treated this way until I got into the workplace. And I think I was naive. I was taught that if I work hard, if I'm loyal, if I treat people well, if I'm productive, all of which I believe I can make a very good case that I was, that it would be returned to me.
Yeah.
And when it wasn't, I just tried to work harder. And Kim, it didn't work.
Right.
I tried to work harder and better and win more awards and get more viewers, whatever those things are in my world in television. It doesn't seem to help. So I'm curious about your experience. And I'd love to hear about the great work that you're doing and for our viewers to understand more about the work that you're doing to address some of the legal issues that are starting to take hold across the country that might really make a difference.
Absolutely. No, and you're exactly right. I mean, all of this stuff happens because of the silence. It locks it in place. And so the trick is for all of us to master, you know, the art of turning the implicit into the explicit. And, you know, we don't talk about these things because shame prevents it. But what I've found is someone who's been in so many conversations where I've had to engage bullies where, you know, on all sides of the equation, where in HR, I'm checking bullies, some of them above my pay grade, is the amount of shame and fear they feel. So you're never alone. Like I can tell you, know, when HR gets a bullying complaint, they're scared. The bosses are scared. Everybody's scared. And so none of us are alone in that. And so the more we can challenge ourselves to find the words that no one ever gave us to just say, like, I'm scared right now. This is really hurting me. This is affecting me. And so, you know, I write a lot and I publish quite a bit on something I call the fear not framework, which is all about how to navigate the fear, how to build evidence, how to articulate the problem in a way most of us have never been taught. and to go through a whole process, because I help people all the time. You know, I was just helping one individual exactly as you described. Like, you know, it's a weak case around protected characteristics, but they were still able to get an attorney and help them. And they're making a claim and they're negotiating an exit that is holding the company accountable, and they're safely able to move forward from there.
Good for them. Good for them. And so are there, my understanding is there's efforts in state legislatures to get some laws on the books above and beyond the civil rights laws that we have currently. Tell us about the latest in that regard.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm thrilled to be part of In Workplace Abuse, which is part of this massive movement to help introduce a new bill called the Workplace Psychological Safety Act. So it's been introduced in Rhode Island, where it passed the Senate. We ran out of time before it passed the House in the legislative cycle, but we'll be back next year to introduce that as well. It's also been introduced with the Massachusetts House, where about 1,000 people submitted testimony. And so, you know, a huge push across the country. My daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, is introducing the bill in Washington, D.C.
Great. True.
She saw what I went through, and she wants to be a civil rights attorney. She is very good at arguing.
I get that. I have a brave kid, so I know. Good for her using her personality to the betterment of society.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, she's been really incredible. We work with the Office of Human Rights. We've got that bill out there. We're starting to get partners in D.C. We're looking at introducing that. Across the U.S., we now have bill directors and teams set up in 25 states, including Washington, D.C. And so there's a huge initiative for 2025 to introduce bills that go beyond protected characteristics that say cruel behavior is just cruel behavior. It goes by reasonable person standard. It literally is what the EEOC kind of states for harassment. We're just removing protected characteristics, and we're removing the burden of proof, because right now, a lot of times, the burden is on the employee to prove that it's racism, it's sexism, or anything.
And ageism, too.
To win an
ageism class suit or any of these other protected things, you have to have where somebody said, and you can prove it, that somebody said, hey, old man, we need to get more young people in here. Your days are, you know, it takes that kind, and people don't do that. And so
They're usually smart.
To win these cases. Even with protected classes is so tough. And in this case, you don't even have that.
You're right. No, it literally requires you to be a mind reader.
Yeah.
In the world of personal injury, which is merging more with employment law, which is wonderful because we're seeing some really great cases around where, particularly in California, the bullying is already going after the injury, and they're getting more sophisticated around that. So regardless of protected characteristics, regardless of having to prove that, because to me, it's the equivalent of I walk outside, I get hit by a car, and, you know, I'm psychologically hurt, I'm financially hurt, I'm physically hurt, but now I have to prove that the driver intended to hit me, that, like, that's, you know, the damage is still the damage.
Yeah, yeah, no, the bar is too high, and good for you to be addressing that. I'm thrilled to be joining this advocacy effort that you and others are involved with. And thank you so much for speaking with me today and joining the conversation. I understand you do have an offering for the viewers today.
Absolutely. So, you know, when in doubt, I hope you will, you know, check out my LinkedIn account. It's at, you know, linkedin.com/Kimberly-E-Williams. I post all the time on how to navigate fear, how to engage with HR when HR may not be helping you, how to engage with a bully when you're totally alone. And, you know, this is advice that I have from someone who's been on both sides of that to really help you make the hairs on someone's neck stand up if you need to, in order to protect yourself as much as possible. But also, too, never be afraid to engage an attorney. Like, every jurisdiction is so different, you know, and some attorneys are more sophisticated in this space than others. A lot of them, you know, when I see on the plaintiff side attorneys in labor employment, they're civil rights focused. You know, there's a lot of brilliant people that could be working for big law, but they're doing this because they genuinely care. They've been through it. And I've honestly had really good experience with folks who were like, hey, your case isn't ready yet, but if these things happen, they have some free advice that may be able to help you. And then I also provide a ton of advice on the steps to prepare yourself. So if you do those things, and you have a really solid timeline and you've got that evidence and you show up to an attorney, you've made it to be an easy yes in order to get that help that you need, because it's a game changer. When the company gets, you know, a letter with legal, you know, a logo and Esquire and all that yes. stuff can make a huge difference. And so, you know, we have, through my company, we partner with great organizations like Workplace Fairness and some other groups of really incredible attorneys who want to help people. And so anyone that reaches out to 1-800-thelaw2.com /employment-law-consultation, you can get a free consultation from there.
All right, great. Well, you are an expert. You're the expert. And thank you, because I've learned a lot. I know anybody watching this will. And I really hope that there are people who will take advantage of that offer, because my final word is, bully victims, you are not alone. We're here and we're here for you. Thanks for watching. Kim, thanks so much to you.
Thank you.